Night Bitch, starring Amy Adams, were released on December 6th in theaters. The horror thriller follows a woman who is convinced she is turning into a dog.
This is a real movie?
Real movie that...
Coming out in theaters.
Coming out in theaters.
In 2024.
Tweeted today by Discussing Film at 8:05 a.m. April 5th, 2024. It is labeled as a thriller and a horror and not a comedy. There is a picture here of Amy Adams and a cute little golden retriever puppy.
Well, is this a fucking remake of the Shaggy Dog, but it's a horror movie? What are we doing here?
All the replies on Twitter say it sounds like a movie Jenna would star in from 30 Rock.
Yeah, 100% it does.
This is my role in Night Bitch. We have to go.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm sorry. You'll go to a movie theater to watch this?
Night Bitch? I will be seated firmly in the middle. We will be early and get the best seats.
I'll take it. You know what? If this is what it takes to get you to a movie theater, I'll take it.
Discussing, and I will be going up to the employee and saying, two or three or four, I don't know how many people are coming with us, tickets for Night Bitch, please.
Oh, yeah. I deliberately didn't buy the Madam Web tickets in advance so I could walk up and be like, two tickets to Madam Web, please.
Oh, I forgot you actually saw that. I'm sorry, you went and saw Madam Web and told Dare Give Me Guff for wanting to see Night Bitch?
No, we'll go see. We'll go watch Night Bitch.
It's also stylized in all caps.
Okay, that's pretty good.
Night Bitch. I cannot wait for a trailer.
I'm so curious.
This episode of Storm Buds, we walk the wasteland of the Mojave Desert and fall in love with Mr. Vegas on the radio all over again. Woohoo! Let's go!
Buds, a storm of buds, and we're going to tell you about how we saved the world.
Well, howdy, partners. Welcome to this week's episode of Storm Buds. I'm your host of light, Jerome Barbatsis. I'm joined by my co-host of light, the varmint, Alexander Helmbrock. Say howdy.
Howdy, Jerome.
Oh, man, here we go again.
Now, you open this box, and we're not putting it back away.
All righty, then. Well,
we're covering Fallout New Vegas. Woo!
Woo!
Okay, we're kicking off Fallout Month with New Vegas. We're really excited to... We have so much to talk about this game. But why don't you, Alexander, give us a quick synopsis of what this game is. How did it come to be? Why did we pick it?
Okay, Fallout New Vegas. I did not do a ton of historical research for this one, but I mean, the long and short of it is Fallout 3 is a huge hit. Bethesda makes Fallout 3 after having acquired the Fallout license, and there's a whole lot of controversy when it comes out because it's a really radical departure from the previous computer RPGs, but then it's a massive hit and sells millions of copies. So then Obsidian Entertainment, makers of other fine computer RPGs, get contracted to make Fallout New Vegas a few years later. There's a big reveal at E3. It comes out. It is infamously buggy and broken at launch, despite being an otherwise excellent game in ways... I should say, clarify here, an infamously buggy and broken game today. It was worse at launch, but it's still not great, as we will get into. Comes out, incredible story, incredible writing, good gameplay, although you'll probably speak more to that than I will. But famously, for whatever reason, because its Metacritic score is 1 point under 90, Obsidian Entertainment gets stiffed on a bunch of bonuses that were written into their contracts for the game's performance, and a whole lot of people weren't happy about it, and it was a big controversy for a while. And I don't know if anyone remembers that happened anymore.
Well, y'all can look into it for further context if you want to. The basic premise of this game, you mentioned the incredible writing, and I think let's give the buds some context as to what actually happens here. So there 200 some years prior to the events of this game, there was nuclear fallout across the world, and everything is radically shifted into basically wastelands, and people are starved and surviving, you know, basically off of salvage and scraps all across the nation. And nations are being rebuilt, and war and weapons are being traded. And there's a lot of opportunity and a lot of suffering in the world of Fallout. Everyone that survived mostly was a vault dweller back in the 200s, and they have sort of propagated the human race in this particular instance of a particular version of our potential future.
Well, Actually, I want to complicate that a little bit. Okay. I don't think it's the case that most people up on the surface were vault dwellers. Most folks on the surface, I think, were descendants of people who managed to live through the apocalypse anyway. The vault dwellers are always treated as being pretty unusual. Mm. Like whenever a vault dweller shows up, the people outside seem to regard you almost as kind of a space alien.
Well,
like one of those kooky people who was underground for 200 years.
Yeah. The problem, I think there is a certain... I think you're right to some extent. I think this game may explicitly say that everyone that survived, pretty much everyone that survived, was in a vault. And then the vaults just open at different times.
Okay.
So maybe generations later.
You're right. I think then that's like the history of it then. Is that like the people on the surface now largely are people who have been up there for generations, even if their great-great-grandfathers came out of vaults?
Yeah, this game in particular, New Vegas, takes place on the west coast of the United States, of course. Everyone is basically united under the New California Republic, whether they like it or not, and that kind of whole story is Fallout 1 and 2, if you want to go into that. We're not going to be covering that this month. There's just too much to talk about. But as it grew, so did the empire. Nope, not this. So did the Republic's needs. So they sent scouts eastward towards Vegas. They saw the remnants there, and it was a city relatively untouched by the fallout because more of the coasts were bombed in like the greater Midwest area, but the desert not so much. And they mobilized to take Hoover Dam and restore it to working condition to provide power to its people. In contrast, there is from the greater Midwest and the south of the United States, a legion of people, Caesar's Legion. They are moving westward to occupy the same space and take the city and the dam for themselves. They are a slaver nation, and they are pretty, they preach about enlightenment and yada yada. It cuts to us in the Mojave Desert. We are seen being shot by a man in a checkered suit in the head. And there's two men in leather jackets next to him. And they say, oh, sorry, but it's just the way the chips fall or whatever they do. And fades to black. We learn that we were a courier and our delivery was intercepted by these motherfuckers. Because we wake up and we're saved by a man, a doctor, who helps us recover from the attack. From there, we make our character set out on our adventure. The character creator, I want to talk about this real quick, very antiquated. Two genders, four races. If your race is not there, you're out of luck. So also, if your gender is not there, you just kind of have to go with it. So that's just a relic of the time. The rest of the character creation system revolves around an acronym that we'll be hearing a lot, SPECIAL. This is basically your stat sheet, your strength, perception, endurance, charisma, intelligence, agility, and luck. In New Vegas, they're not irrelevant. But it's a very much a solved problem. This is a very old game. I think maybe mods will fix it. We could talk somewhat about the mods. There's an extensive modding community because this is a cult classic. The way to go about it, though, basically, if you want to play this game, the general strategy that I picked up on was to almost max your intelligence so that you get as many skill points every time you level up. But then you have enough points in endurance to get enhancements later so that you like get your additional skill points from what are they called? They're implants. And then charisma is awful and useless. Don't
invest in charisma?
Don't, because
good, I didn't.
Because the point of the skill, what happens with the skill system is that it gives you your starting skill points, like your bartering and your speech and your intimidation or whatever other science and things like that. But as you level up, you could just select skill points anyway. So you can still max out your speech even if you have one charisma. And do everything that way because you get more skill points the more intelligence you have. So it basically just, if you put everything into intelligence, you can just get anything you want.
That works.
Yeah, so it's a little antiquated in that way, but...
But I do want to talk a bit about how much I really enjoy this opening, though.
Yeah, it's great.
And like... Part of that is because I didn't get much further than the opening, because the game would not stop crashing on me. And
yeah.
I want to walk through that saga in a bit. But part of it also is just... We're not going to talk too much about Fallout 3 or Fallout 4 on this episode. We'll probably save a lot of that for the Fallout 4 podcast we're going to do.
Fallout 4 is our newfound adventure, you know, the game that's new to both of us. And we'll be playing it at the end of the month, the last April.
But just out of the gate, this, I think, really establishes a lot of the stuff that Obsidian as a studio is really good at, in contrast to a lot of the things that Bethesda as a studio is, in my opinion, quite bad at. Mm-hmm. Immediately, I think the decision to have the player character be a courier and not be a vault dweller the way that you are in Fallout 3 and Fallout 4 is a very smart decision, because it grounds the player and the world kind of like on the same plane. Like, mm-hmm. the premise with the other Fallout games was always sort of that by making the player character a vault dweller, you get to go for kind of the whole stranger in a strange land type thing, right? You get to be a person from one place in time dropped into a world with another place in time. But I never really feel like the games, the modern ones, the 3D ones, make good on that effect. It always ends up just sort of feeling kind of arbitrary, like you're a kid who's been dropped off at Disneyland. Whereas this, actually, even though your character has amnesia and doesn't have any predetermined history going in, it makes it feel like the world above on the surface has more going on and has more history to it that you are a part of, as opposed to being this visitor.
Yeah, I think that makes... I think I agree with that as well. I think that also what happens is that it's novel that you're not a Vault Dweller. So it in contrast to the sea of Vault Dweller games, like 3, 4, and 76, you are... There is the idea, the creative spark to that you can come up with your own background. Maybe like in, say, Cyberpunk, where you're like... You could be a corpo, a street kid, or a nomad, or whatever, right? Fun fact: when I the nuclear fallout, the year that happens is the year 2077. I don't know what people's obsession is with that particular year.
77 is fun to
it's
say.
It's just 77.
Can I say a couple other things?
Yeah, go for it.
The other thing that I think this demonstrates that I like about Obsidian Games is immediately out of the gate, again with that setup with those three factions, the California Republic, the Legion, and the Brotherhood of Steel, right?
Yeah, the Brotherhood's there. It's not part of the intro.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There is the Brotherhood as well. Well, there's like the Brotherhood of Steel, and then there's all sorts of things. There's the Enclave. There's more factions than there's going on in the surface as well. Mm-hmm. And all of those, and your relationship with those determines the ending, and I will be talking a little bit about the ending and some late game stuff. So if you really want to go into New Vegas blind at this point, that's fine. That's totally cool. But I will warn you at this point that I'm going to be talking about some of the things I did that I remember doing, and the things that I would do if I were to replay this game all the way to the end. I got pretty far. I like sped run a lot of stuff in my playthrough of this, but I didn't quite finish it because as soon as I kind of remembered all the options and all the outcomes, once I got like the gist of the premise of the game, I was like, okay, I got it. I'm ready for this, I'm ready to move on.
Well, and the thing is that like the way all those factions are set up and the way that the characters that you then encounter in the game are sketched such that like it's comprehensible, the various relations and opinions they have of the different power factions they have to live under, all that stuff is again something that Obsidian is like quite good at. It's like the strength of their games often is that they're able to sketch out societies and place people within them and make that sort of like immersive is not quite the right word, but cohesive really is like an important part of it.
Yeah, I think the setting and the general pace of the general pacing and the kind of the overall storytelling is pretty good. You mentioned that you really or that you that the dialogue in this game is strong. I think it kind of falls thin across the board for me. I think that a lot of the things that people say out of context are really impactful and interesting and maybe poetic at times. But when you put the sentences and the events in together into a greater context, I feel that it falls over pretty kind of out of a stiff breeze. Like, for instance, in the beginning, there's a guy named Ringo in a gas station, and you show up with your weapon, right? And he says, "Hey, who are you?" Because he's on the run from the powder gangers who are out to kill him. And he's like, "Who are you?" And all you have to do without a skill check or anything is just say, "I'm cool." And you're still pointing your gun at him. And he's like, "Oh, okay, great. I'm glad." Right. And then you go on to develop this cool relationship with him or make this choice to join up with the Powder Gangers, which is another quibble I have with the writing in this game, is that so that leads into that. And there's some other instances where, like, you are maybe there's a quest I picked up on the way to speedrunning New Vegas where this guy is looking for his scientists so that they can figure out how people in this specific vault are growing vegetables really, really well. And then his assistant, kind of right next to him, is like, hey, actually don't do that. And it just kind of goes from, like, from one extreme to the other very quickly, because there's like, oh, don't do that, he's just doing progress, he's going to exploit people or whatever. And that's the thing that this game falls into repeatedly on a micro and a macro level. There's a pretty obvious good choice to make at any given time and a pretty obvious bad choice, and that bad choice always ends up with slavery again, especially with the Legion. Like,
yeah, that bit's
there's
not great.
There's no real reason, compelling reason for me, apart from just morbid curiosity to sell Ringo out and kill everyone in Good Springs and sell them to the Powder Gangers. There's no compelling reason for me to join up with these cultist legionnaires that are like straight out of Silent Hill, and just murdering people in Nipton for the sake of it. Of just being like, because there's just like, you're a monster, or I'll hear you out, or you're speaking the truth, sir. Like, come on. There's no way, there's no, like, actual nuance to the baddies in this game.
Yeah, that's true. And, like, that's, I got two thoughts on that. The first, that definitely is kind of like a bit of an old school RPG throwback in a way that hasn't aged super well. Like, you know, like, that's a lot of that stuff really is there for the, like, the novelty fun factor of, like, wouldn't it be great if you could join these assholes?
Yeah.
But, like, it doesn't really build out beyond that.
It's not compelling to do. So, however, once you do make it to New Vegas, and the game does a pretty good job of trying to stop you from rushing to New Vegas by putting some strategically placed death claws that I stealth boyed past because I said fuck that, and you meet the guy who made the order of the item that was stolen, the platinum chip, Mr. House, suddenly there's a third faction involved, and that faction is just New Vegas proper trying to become its own independent nation. So you could side with the NCR, side with the Legion, or side with the independent nation. And there is a bit of a compelling push and pull between NCR and the independent state, but not as much still, because Mr. House is still obviously a huge megalomaniac, whereas the NCR, yeah, it's pretty much martial law, but there's still structure and a benefit to that over them to have them do it, as opposed to keeping things as the status quo in the game, in my opinion. That's what I would do, but I think there's more of an argument to be made for an independent New Vegas, and then there's just, like, absolutely not really anything in this day and age that would compel me to join the Legion, apart from just wanting to see the dialogue. So as for my particular run, what I did, what I thought was interesting and different, and maybe you guys want to try it as well, is that I went for full science and repair and medicine, so that I could be a gay Dr. Science with Arcade, who's the gay dude companion, which is what I want to. I mean, I also want to shout this game out for being so early and so having a diverse cast in terms of sexual orientation. There's Arcade for gayness, and I don't remember who the lesbian representative is, or if there are anyone who's bisexual, but it's been long enough. But there, it was nice to see that you could not only romance him, but also use your gay perk to bribe other gay NPCs to do things for you by being flirty with them by that gender, and you're not gender locked into doing that because you're a man or a woman, right? It's just like you could be a lady killer or the gentleman one. I can't remember what it's called.
The perks in this game are fun.
They're so fun.
Like, I can't just badmouth the Bethesda games on this episode, but, like, in contrast to a lot of the ways in which stuff feels tired or forced in those games, there's a real sense of, like, of playfulness to a lot of the game design in this one.
Yes. Yeah, I think a perk like Strong Back is really funny, even though it's effectively just, like, it's effectively a boost to your endurance, but it really adds a lot of flavor to the fact that it's kind of a mix between endurance and strength. There, that you're getting inventory space as well as just the ability to kind of have a stronger torso, right? And I want to talk about the combat and specifically the limb system. This is what, I mean, Bethesda came up with this, so
yeah,
this,
like
we'll give Bethesda credit here. Mm-hmm. The limb system is basically if you get shot or hit in a repeated part of your body, you can no longer use that body part of your body effectively, and the same goes for your enemies. And you can more easily target them by slowing down time with the VATS system, which is just kind of a bullet time mode where you can spend points to fire a direct shot at a limb. And that is, I think that's the core of that Fallout gameplay is really fun, and that it is that extra layer is something that for me is missing from a lot of Elder Scrolls games. Mm-hmm. In comparison, the slowdown for kills is in this game still. Every time you get a good critical hit kill or a nasty kill, the game slows down in a really fun and satisfying way.
That also, like, one third of the time is going to break in some weird way.
Possibly. But yeah, it's really good. I like to describe it as really good. It's fun, but it was also good jank. It's a good jank. There's a lot of ways to game and cheat this system here. Caravan is a mini game that exists within Fallout New Vegas. Do you remember this?
No.
It's a card game where you kind of are making stacks of cards up to 25 to 20 or 21 to 26, kind of sort of blackjack style, and you can bet caps and win caps from people, and the NPCs suck ass at this game. So it's a great way to just rob anyone that plays Caravan. You get a shit ton of money. Its charisma being hilariously useless is just like still like, oh, that's oops. But you know what? It's still not that you still have enough customization on top of that because of the way you can choose all the skill points and the things you can do. And one thing that this game does really well, and I think Fallout 3 does this too, so we can kind of combine the two, is that it's very clear what your skill check, what your skill level needs to be, kind of Disco Elysium level, sort of, where you're like, oh, you can come back to this. You can't try it again most of the time, but you can come back to this after you level up or something. There's not that many good ways to make pins in your map in this game or anything like that, so you probably want a notepad. But there is a It is still a really exciting and fun world to revisit for that reason, because there's so many different ways you can build your character out, and the perks are fun. You want to choose something next time. The playthroughs aren't that long, really. You could do the main story pretty quick. You could explore around the area pretty quick if you know where you're going. The world's not that big because this game's pretty old in comparison. Like, this is pre-Skyrim, so it's not going to feel... Nothing's going to feel that big anymore from back in this day. But it doesn't... It feels a little bit bigger, I will say, because the walk speed is so slow.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? And the geography is like... Mm-hmm. There's like enough mountains and valleys and stuff that it's hard to walk in a straight line to somewhere.
It is. It's all a wasteland, but it's still interesting geography. And part of that is due to the radio in this game. You could turn on the radio in this game and it will play real world music from before the bombs fell, classical music from the 1950s and 60s. And there's a radio show called Mr. Vegas. There are plenty of Spotify playlists out there with a lot of these songs that are allowed to be on Spotify or YouTube playlists as well, if you could find them. If you're going to stream this game, I recommend finding a way to split the audio so you don't get copyright struck like I did. No, I didn't get copyright struck, but I did split the audio, so I didn't get copyright struck. It's something that is, as soon as it started playing, I was like, okay, we're back. And I could play this game to completion if I knew I wasn't going to burn out on Fallout for our newfound adventure. There's so much still to talk about in this game.
For example, I like that this game has actual dialogue options. Like,
true.
It's like...
There are options. They're pretty clear cut, but there are options.
I mean, there are options, and like, yes, like the game isn't always the most reactive to the different things that you say, but that's never really the point of different dialogue options for me. What I appreciate about having a wide variety of those sort of different lines is that it helps me get into a bit more of a role-playing mindset and feel a bit more expressive in terms of like the character that I'm actually playing.
Yeah, and with the dialogue options, a lot of modern games fall into this trap too, where you know what you're saying when you click the dialogue options. You're not saying one thing and then V is saying something completely different.
Yes,
you're
exactly.
Like, okay. It's not exactly how I would have said what that was, but
like Mass Effect 2 started doing this, and then the new Bethesda games do it also, and like I guess Cyberpunk also does it. It drives me insane.
Yeah. So but part of that maybe is just because this game is so old that there isn't a voice actor for your character. But there is voice acting for everyone else, which is very impressive.
Actually pretty impressive.
Really impressive still. I mean, it was impressive when Bethesda did it. It's impressive then again. And I think New Vegas does a really good job of avoiding pitfalls wherein when people are walking by, they don't, it's not Dragon's Dogma all over again. They're not saying, you don't feel, I don't think I heard people say the same voice line more than like twice. And I met quite a, there's only so many people in this universe because it's sparse. but it is still, I was still excited to meet new people and talk to them and see what they had to offer. And I was excited to run into psychos in the wasteland that were trying to get my sarsaparilla caps. partly because there's one companion that I've never had before that I had this time around, because I don't think I've ever done a science route. And that's Edie. I want to give a shout out to Edie. E, capital D, hyphen E. This laser bitch that you resurrect in the town of Prim just fucking obliterates bitches. It's just this floating laser orb. And anytime anyone gets remotely close to me, it's just like beep, boop, boop. It's like, this is the most fun I've ever had. And it's so powerful. I haven't even touched the console commands, which are a staple in Bethesda games, and they make the game extremely accessible and enjoyable. If you want to slash kill all the death claws instead of run by them, you could just do that instead. And it's wonderful. I can't sing the praises of this game enough, apart from its bugginess and the lack of borderless window without mods, but I did mod it successfully, was able to do that. There's a mod pack that was recommended to me that I ended up not installing because I got overwhelmed by the changelog, because I didn't really understand what was being changed, and I got kind of nervous, but it was a mod pack the original developer made. And then the original developer, whose name I sent it to you, I'm checking, Jay Sawyer, Jay Sawyer's Ultimate Edition. So there's a community that came around to update his original mod pack mm-hmm. to work for today's age. I would check it out. It's on Nexus Mods.
Oh, wait, is this from, was the original one from Josh Sawyer, from the writer?
Yes.
Okay, yes. So he's on the game then.
Yeah.
Josh Sawyer, famous video game writer.
Yes. Yeah, so the mod pack. This is kind of, if they were to make this game without deadlines, the game that he thought would have been the perfect version of this, or the fully realized vision that he had, which is saying a lot. There's a lot to really enjoy here, and it's probably worth, if you've never heard of this and you're curious about New Vegas and you like modded games in particular, checking that out would be a great way to make New Vegas really good without quite so much jank involved. I don't know if it fixes a lot of the bugs that you encountered.
That would be hard. So we've talked mostly about your experience.
Yeah, it's your
and
turn.
The reason for that is because I was unable to play this game. I never beat it before, but I played like a decent chunk of it, enough that I'm pulling from my impressions from that when I played it several years ago. I have a relatively up-to-date PC. Most of the parts are from, you know, last couple of years. The first time I tried to boot this game up and load into my save file, it just crashed immediately after the loading screen. Did that a couple of times. You sent me that mod, which said that it fixed a number of bugs. So I went ahead and installed that mod and loaded the game up. And loaded into the game, and actually loaded into the game this time, at which point all of the DLC began to activate one after the other, including giving me an increasingly high amount of items like grenades and guns and stuff that then caused my character to become encumbered. So I then lumbered forward about 5 feet on the pavement, trying to figure out how I could drop things, and then the game threw an out-of-memory error and crashed on me.
That sounds
So then weird. I booted it back up and was like, okay, maybe I had the graphic settings too high. So I went back to medium settings and loaded back in. Great. Awesome. This time it works. So I immediately ditch all the various guns and grenades I've been given so that I can walk at a reasonable walking pace, and then made a new save file, and then figured I should probably test this. So I quit and loaded into that save file. And upon loading the save file, the game crashed. So then I figured maybe there's a problem with the save. So I booted it back up, went back in and loaded the previous quick save that had worked before that allowed me to even get in and throw all the items away. And the game loaded in and immediately crashed. Hit a looping audio file that it hung on for about a minute and a half and then crashed desktop. So then... Thanks. I uninstalled the entire game and reinstalled it and got it working when I started a new game, which worked and was great and got me through the whole opening, got the opening cutscene, got the intro with Doc, got to do all the fun special stuff and everything. I was like, great, this is awesome. I'm enjoying this. Love the writing in this game. Love the style. Get to the entrance of Doc's house, open the front door, enter the wasteland, loading screen, crash the desktop. And that's when I said, I'm sorry, I don't think I can play this game for this episode.
Well, you did what you could, and your experience is as valid as probably many other people's experiences. Or, honestly, it's just kind of the way technology kind of becomes obsolete, whether we want it to or not. It is unfortunate, but maybe when there's... I don't know. If anyone has any solutions for out-of-memory errors for Fallout New Vegas, hit us up on our Discord. Maybe Alex would love to revisit this game. He really would. I know it. Because, like, it is so intoxicating the moment you get in and start moving and start shooting around, rooting tooting, get people talking to you.
The atmosphere in this game is just so good.
It's like, still good, even though it looks... old.
Like I said, it's like a lot of it feels fun. Even like when you're filling out your special stats, all of like the custom words that are given to every tier of every possible stat, like it's like a level of care put into like the presentation of this thing in a way that just like the people making this were really enjoying getting in and playing around with and having fun with this premise and the setting and what you could do with it and how you could stretch it and make it interesting.
I completely got the same feeling, and that I think is basically going to do it for our roundup of Fallout New Vegas. Check it out. It's probably going to go on sale at some point, you know, soon, because the Amazon show is coming out. There might be a franchise sale soon. Who knows, right? There might be a big
thing. Oh, yeah. Wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. So with that being said, we're going to take a quick break and we'll get in a word from our sponsors before we go to our quest log and our fun B segment.
We're going to read some ads.
Jerome, would you believe that earlier this week I had Chipotle for breakfast?
I would, actually. I don't think very highly of you.
But not just regular Chipotle, though. It was Chipotle Crunch Cereal.
Wow. Tell me more.
Chipotle Crunch Cereal is the hot new breakfast cereal from your favorite fast casual dining chain.
Oh my goodness.
It's sourced directly from Chipotle kitchen restaurants in your neighborhood and comes in all their famous flavors like chicken, barbacoa, and Chipotle chicken.
I've heard of getting Chipotle in a bowl, but this is ridiculous.
Every single bowl consists of small dehydrated nuggets of all of the ingredients you find at your local Chipotle serving bar. You can get the fajita veggies, you can get a dehydrated tomato sauce, you can get a dehydrated queso even. It just hits the milk and immediately reinflates.
Can I get guac?
Yes, but the guac is not dehydrated. The guac is just fresh.
The guac is fresh. How much is it?
How much is it?
Yeah.
It's another $8 per box.
Okay.
Each box of Chipotle Crunch cereal is $14.99, and the guac is an additional $8.
Right. Yeah. No, that lines up with my expectations, unfortunately.
I gotta say, you know, I prefer my breakfast to be, you know, sweet, possibly, a little crunchy, maybe like, you know, with some nuts in there, but I was not prepared for how much I enjoyed just having a bunch of Chipotle soggy in a bowl of milk.
Do they have disparate discrete Chipotle boxes for each potential order?
Oh, yes.
Okay, so they have, let me get this straight, their manufacturing process and their branding and their packaging includes upwards of 6,400 different yes. permutations of serial. Okay.
Yes. It actually, it temporarily crashed the global UPC database when they were all uploaded last week, but it's up and running again now, so you can scan it out at your supermarket just fine.
Pretty freaking weak. That's a pretty weak database. That is really, that's not that many entries. What is that?
They were all uploaded at once.
How big is this model? Massive. Okay, well, what's your favorite order? What's your favorite cereal?
Usually I get the barbacoa. I load it up with triple queso and double cream cheese. I go...
cream cheese?
No, sorry, sour cream. I usually go no rice, pinto beans. I go the spicy salsa, and I go like double servings of lettuce.
I just get the chicken.
You just get the chicken just by itself?
It's just a bowl of chicken.
You just have them throw the chicken in the container?
I just have a bowl of dehydrated chicken and I pour orange juice over it.
Well, you know, they do have a SKU for that. It's still $14.99, but you can buy it.
I think, definitely do that. And don't buy a separate bottle of Simply Orange. That would cost less. Don't do that.
Don't do that. No, buy the all-in-one product.
Absolutely.
That's what we're being paid for here. You got to buy the whole thing.
But they don't even have to. This sounds amazing. I would love to get my chicken and orange from Chipotle, and definitely not from Panda Express.
All right, well, don't look now, but Panda Puffs are slated for launch in August 2024.
Oh, boy, chicken lo mein flakes. I can't wait.
End of ad.
No promo code or anything. Do we get anything out of this?
Go to your local Chipotle and enter code STORMBUDS.
Just yell STORMBUDS at the cashier when you're done, and they'll throw you a box for free with your burrito order.
That's how it works. That's what we were told.
STORMBUDS! Thank you.
Donk.
Well, that was a lovely sponsor this episode, wasn't it?
Delicious. I am eating it for breakfast every day at this point.
Fantastic. Okay, that explains the smell. We will be moving into our usual sidetrackery, you know, our usual just chatter. At this point, we will be opening our books, checking off all the things that are in our quest log. And I'm going to start. I found a couple of really good board games I want to talk about.
Yeah?
The first board game I found, or was shared with me, because I went to a local gaming event, it was Deducto. D-E-D-U-C-K-T-O. You are basically kind of, it's a card game that you could play socially, and you are trying to figure out your identity. And on the card, on every card, there is an animal, a background, and an item that animal is wearing. And you are trying to, you hold one up face away, and then you place cards in front of you that may or may not have features in common with the card you're holding up. And people say yes or no. And eventually you deduce which one you are based on people's responses. It is very fun, very quick, very casual, great game to play. It's a 2-4 player game. So don't make the mistake I did. Try and bring it to a big event, and then be like, whoops, there's only so many cards in here, so this isn't going to work.
You said it's kind of like Guess Who Quest, like Mastermind?
It's like Guess Who Mastermind with Hanabi.
Sure.
But you're not working together. You're still trying to be the first one to figure out who you are. That was my first, the first board game that was introduced to me that I think is a really fun addition to my rotation, as well as Death in the Cards. This is an Agatha Christie inspired social deduction game as well. You are trying to figure out which person is an imposter amongst the group, similar to, of course, One Night Ultimate Werewolf, Mafia, and Deception Murder in Hong Kong. But the way you do it is that everyone is dealt secret cards. Everyone is dealt 3 secret cards. So if there were 4 people, there would be 12 secret cards in play. And one of those secret cards, one of the 12, is the murderer. And you are trying to get people to divulge their very scandalous social secrets. And, of course, the murderer is trying to hide their secret until the deck of cards that people are drawing from runs out entirely. The secrets range from untouched, I've never been kissed, to hoax, prank caller. I've called the police without there being an actual crime, or I've framed my friends for crimes they didn't commit, things like that. That sort of nature that are very fun to lean into and develop your character that way. I've got a gambling addiction, I think was another one that came up. And it is just a hoot and a holler and a riot. Eventually, it becomes pretty clear who the murderer is because they're drawing a lot more cards than everyone else. And then it's just a matter of trying to get them to reveal their secrets without them having enough counterspells to stop you. There are, in fact, counterspells. It's a great time. I loved it. Really, really good. Check it out. Death in the Cards was that board game.
I think we need to play both of these pretty soon.
Yes, we'll get that. I have them, so I'll bring them to our next game night. And I also streamed Kevin, but it was a flop because the audio was really choppy and it was not optimized well, so I couldn't like split it or do anything. And then the stream vibe was just totally off because everyone muted because it sounded so bad.
Oh no.
So that's okay. The Fallout 4 stream was way more fun. Tell me what's in your side quest log thing.
Dragon's Dogma 2, baby.
Ah, you've fully committed.
Oh yeah, I'm into this game now.
Okay.
A few things going on here.
So you're the Kirk Hamilton to my Jason Schreier.
Thing number
Both
one.
Future guests.
Thing number one, I changed classes from Archer to Rogue just to switch it up, and okay. And immediately was like, oh, this is not just like I use a different weapon now. All of my combat controls are fundamentally different, and like all of my moves and mobility around the battlefield have totally changed. It was the moment where I was like, I felt the Monster Hunter development influence on it.
Uh-oh.
Because like, in a good way.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
Like, all the different classes feel different in the way that different weapons in Monster Hunter feel extremely different to engage with.
Sure.
And I was like, oh, so I could get really into like unlocking additional combat skills and then mixing and matching them and then switching classes and then just spending like, you know, a lot of time sort of exploring and pushing the different, like the different edges of this combat system to their maximum. So I started having a lot more fun with the actual fights. The other thing is that this world is so weird. This looks almost like a Skyrim-like or something, but it feels almost like a bit more like Yoko Taro going on. It's not quite as explicitly weird as something like a Nier game or like a Drakengard, but there is stuff going on in this world. I met a guy who lives in a shack by the edge of like the sea who seems to know that he lives in a video game, or at the very least, he's aware of the fact that his world is artificial and that it's weird that like every 50 years, the dragon returns and kills a bunch of people and a new chosen hero has to rise up in order to slay the dragon, only to have the exact same thing happen over and over for hundreds and hundreds of years at this point.
Oh, so it's Tunic.
Possibly Tunic.
Great game. Play it.
And then also just... I love the pawns. I love these weird little people who are half aware, half people who seem to be sapient, but also only care about you and helping you out and just being the most upbeat, chipper little minions.
I joke about Tunic, but I think... it's all kind of coming together for me in a weird way because I'd mentioned Triple Click hosts before, and they just did an episode on friction gaming with Dragon's Dogma 2 being a prime example of how there is intentional friction and how it's kind of stupid to have to run around the same town to find the quest NPC that keeps fucking wandering around. And you're like, where is it?
Oh, it's so good.
But it's like, but there's a certain joy to that, and there's a couple, like, I was surprised to hear in that episode they didn't bring up Tunic, which is a game, a Zelda, is an isometric adventure game with the intentional obfuscation of the controls and the powers that you have by way of an instruction manual that is not written in any decipherable language. You just kind of have to guess around it, kind of like Kevin, I guess, as well, which is so I think there's a certain, like, there's a couple of parallels there wherein Dragon's Dogma is introducing friction in a sort of traversal and a lack of clarity in a way that is similar to Tunic but very different just, I think, a different vehicle, but a similar effect and impact of like, oh, okay, I'm in this world and things are really inscrutable and I'm just kind of thrust into the thick of these things. And it seems to be defying expectations in ways that please a lot of people and very much displease a lot of others.
Yes, I think this is a very polarizing game. But I want to talk about two things that I find kind of delightful and charming about it.
Okay.
The first is the way that even through their sort of repetitive like lines that they deliver, the pawns that you follow me around, I'm getting this, I'm reading into them this sort of like fun, strange characterization. They love treasure chests. All these little fuckers, they love treasure chests so much. And it is endlessly funny to me that as we're walking around town, if we pass by a treasure chest that is up in like in a second story room in a building that we can't even see, they'll immediately peg it and be like, look, a treasure chest over there. And it constantly,
right,
wandering throughout the world, they'll just over and over muse to themselves out loud. They all say the exact same line, but they all say it with like a different voice and a different voice actor and a different inflection. And so just endlessly over and over again, I have just been hearing them consider, they say, what is it they say? They say something to the effect of, while certainly we could procure new weapons with coin, we might also find some in treasure chests. While certainly we might find some new weapons or purchase some new weapons with coin, we might also find some in treasure chests.
Games with companions for me can be really hit or miss. A particular favorite series of games of mine is the Mana series, which are notorious for companions, even though some of them, like I think Sword of Mana, is pretty trash because your companion AI will constantly just run into the fucking lava and things like that. But like with Fallout particularly, I think it's a pretty big hit with companions, even though sometimes they get in the way of my bullets and get got. But maybe the save is forgiving. But like this game, I'm really unsold about whether or not I would love it or hate it.
I don't know that you would have fun with it.
I don't think I would either. It there is a certain level of jank that I do find loving and charming, but there's also a certain level of friction that I find to be really inaccessible and frustrating for me, whether or not it's intentional. Its impact, a certain level of systemic friction has a very much negative impact on me. But there are other games where I really enjoy struggling. Like I like the struggle of fighting games. I like the struggle of like games that require a lot of mechanical skill or like pressing buttons at right times or anything like that. Anything that revolves a lot of finesse, but like just kind of that struggle of like knowing what I'm supposed to do and not how to do it or achieve it, that I think Dragon's Dogma keeps kind of throwing at me, is just going to make me feel a lot of despair. I'm just like going to give up on it, I think.
Yeah, you have to be kind of willing to bash your head against it a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, I want to talk about one other thing that I noticed, and I think it's a really small touch, but it does highlight, I think, the level of care that's going into this game underneath all of the jank, which is that this is a game with fall damage, but it's not super clear to me exactly how far you can fall before taking fall damage. Like, you can drop 8 feet and be fine. You can drop 50 feet and you'll be hurt really badly. But where in the middle there exactly you start taking damage is kind of hard to gauge. And the thing also is that what happens when you jump off like an edge is that your character starts by jumping into this sort of bold confident pose. But as the fall starts to go on longer, they start to tip forward and flail a bit and start to panic as it becomes clear how far they're falling. And so repeatedly, I run into the situation where I look down and I'm like, that's like 15 feet. That's probably okay, right? And I jump off, and my character jumps off, and we both feel good. And then as we're plunging downwards, he starts to kind of go like, wait, whoa, whoa, wait, at the exact same moment that I go, oh, wait, I misjudged this. And then he face plants directly into the ground and takes like a 2/3 of his health bar in damage.
Yeah,
and
I mean, that sounds refreshing compared to what I just played. I just played Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, which has that Square Enix stiffness. Mm-hmm. It's an open world game, but like they don't take too many risks with the polish or the way in which they let your character interact. If you're able to jump on something, it's just kind of like scripted, and things are, and it's the same way with 16 as well. So whatever. So that, I mean, that sounds refreshing, but also, I mean, the same similar thing is just like, I'm getting that out of Fallout too as well.
So. Yeah. No, this game is so loose. It like walking your character around feels like driving a wavy tube man on a toy car. You just sort of like careen from like doorway to doorway.
Yeah, we'll see if I end up picking it, but it certainly is respectable and interesting to hear about. So thank you very much for sharing that. We are going to move into a relatively quick B segment here. And it is really unfortunate that you did not get to spend too much time in Fallout New Vegas, because we are going to be busting out the good old Horn of Hraesvelgr.
Oh, okay. I don't.
If there isn't a game to do, like, this is the game to do Horn of Hraesvelgr for.
Okay.
We're busting it out, damn it. Hold on.
Wait, okay. I need to make a request here.
Yeah?
Can I pull up a list of the tracks that come on the radio?
Sure.
Because without it, sure. I'm just guessing from all
sure,
of pop music.
You do that. I'll record the sting. Okay, we're back. We are going to start our Horn of Hraesvelgr segment. And after we came back, I will be full. This is going to be our second round of it. After we came back, there was the technical difficulty in which I was doing something and I did not turn Alex's mic back on. But I will give him credit. He got one of the answers.
I'll take it.
He does have this, but we are going to, there's plenty of songs on the New Vegas radio list. So if you're new here, this is our Name That Tune segment. I play songs on the automatone and I try to do my best and see if Alex can guess them. He gets two guesses per song, because we don't want this to take 300 years. He's got a list of all the songs on the New Vegas soundtrack in the Mr. Vegas radio, and I will play three of them and see if he gets any of them. I now have to think of three more because I had other ones prepared. Okay. First song.
Is this Where Have You Been All My Life?
It is not Where Have You Been All My Life. You get one more shot.
Mm-hmm.
I'll start again from the beginning.
Is this Ain't That a Kick in the Head?
It is not Ain't That a Kick in the
God,
Head.
Why do so many things sound like Ain't That a Kick
this
in the Head?
This is Heartaches by the Number by Guy Mitchell.
Okay.
Heartaches by the Number. You know, heartache number one.
Also sounds like you're going, Ain't That a Kick in the Head?
I guess. Okay. Song number two.
Is it Something's Gotta Give by Bing Crosby?
It is not Something's Gotta Give by Bing Crosby. I'm going to start again because that's all I remember of the song.
Mad About the Boy?
It is not. It is It's a Sin by Eddie Arnold. It's a sin, my darling, how much I love you. Don't remember the words. All right. Last song. See if you can get this. Uh-huh.
Is Blue Moon?
It is Blue Moon, and I'm glad you got that because I didn't remember anything else. I was like, please get this.
I'll take it.
There's not that many songs on this list. So we ran through the ones we
ran
through before. Yeah. I was most proud of my Johnny Guitar performance by Peggy Lee, but you didn't get that one, so.
This segment is, like, so odd because you are extremely good at music and pick it up very quickly, and I have, like, the opposite of perfect pitch, where I often can't recognize songs I am actively listening to, and so I...
Thank you very much for the compliment, but, oh, it's a team effort, and we got something. We got there. You know, you were at a disadvantage because you couldn't play this game.
Yeah, that would have helped if I'd spent more time.
That was really unfortunate.
I was kind of half recalling most of the songs on this list. Like, yeah, that's kind of how that goes, right?
The amount of time, I think you guessed Blue Moon a lot, and you also guessed Bing Crosby a lot. And I was like, I don't remember how Something's Gotta Give goes. I remember Something's Gotta Give. And that's it. So
you could have probably done that. I would have got it.
I don't know. But that is our Horn of Hreisvelgr segment coming to a close. That was a fun one. I mean, I had to do it. Of our segments, that's what I had to do. But that's going to close us out for this week's episode of Stormbuds. Next week, we're going to be talking Fallout, but we're going to be talking about it from a different perspective. We're going to be getting a coverage of the new Magic the Gathering universes.
Wait,
beyond
are?
Fallout? Of course we are.
How is this? Are we going to buy it? Are we going to play?
No. I'm going to bitch. What you may not know is that Alex and I started our friendship due to Magic the Gathering. We met through a mutual friend who had hosted Magic the Gathering nights some 10 plus years ago. And Magic the Gathering, I'm a bit of an old fogey when it comes to it. And I saw all this Fallout stuff coming out. I love Fallout. But I want to talk about it. I think it's a really interesting in terms of also including just Wizards of the Coast in general in the gaming scene, and why they're doing this now, tying in with the Amazon series coming out, and all this sort of hubbub about this. Like, what does it mean? How does this work? Does this get me, as somebody that's stopped playing, more interested in playing the game? What is the impact of this? I want to do some research on what other people have said about this kind of thing and
this
the universe is beyond.
It's a good conversation, actually, because you burned out on Magic about 2 years ahead of me, but I ended up following almost the exact same curve. I think the same stuff that was causing you to be like, man, fuck this, I then 2 years later started going like, man, fuck this.
It's something that we're both passionate about but highly critical of at this point.
Oh, here's the thing. Fallout Month is going to have a good amount of bitching in it.
Yeah.
Between this and what I'm cooking up for Fallout 4 at the end of the month, we're going to...
Okay, I'm excited, you know, because, well, we'll get there when we get there, but next week is going to be our Universes Beyond discussion, and just a brief dip into the world of tabletop and other gaming as well as video gaming, because I feel like there's some overlap in somewhere, or it's just whatever I want. It's what I want to talk about because I think it'd be interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think we can say also now, the week after that, we're going to watch the first and possibly the second episode of the Amazon Fallout TV series and talk about that as well.
Yes. So multimedia month of Fallout goodness. Stay tuned for that. I am also streaming live on Twitch much more regularly now. You can follow me at twitch.tv/Jerome Mouse or join our Discord. Link is in the description below. I put notifications there. So you can see whenever I go live on my new Fallout 4 playthrough. I'm enjoying streaming it. I'll say that much. There's a lot to do. There's a lot of enjoyment gotten out of it. It's not bad, but it's a great time. Come hang out. Would really appreciate to see you there. I think that about does it for our housekeeping. Thank you all so much for the growing community and the likes on Spotify, et cetera, that really helps keep us going. And until next week, Born from Buds, Storm of Buds, we've been the Storm Buds, baby.
Good night.
Good night.